Hey everyone, it's Caitlin Bristow. You can listen to my show, Off the Vine, with Caitlin Bristow every Tuesday on Podcast One. Hear me take on taboo topics and unfiltered advice. I'll also be dishing with some amazing celebrities. Oh, and did I mention there'll be wine? So grab a glass and join me every Tuesday on PodcastOne.com, the new Podcast One app, or subscribe on Apple Podcasts.
Coming to you live from the BB Storm Watch Center, it is Rob Has a Podcast. And now here's someone who, at best, is a character on a TV show. It is not Rob Cesternino. Halt that announcement. Mike Bloom here, covering for Rob Cesternino, who actually is en route to where I am, New York City, along with Taryn Armstrong and Alex Kidwell, doing the Big Brother live show tomorrow. Let's see if they'll be able to turn the Big Apple into the Big Meatball by the time they're done with it. But while they're gone, while the cat's away, the cat ears are gone, at least the mice will play. And I have two lovely mice with me to recap this very dramatic episode of Big Brother. First, our requisite LFC member, Melissa Denny. Melissa, how are you doing tonight?
I'm good. I'm not sure I'm going to be much help tonight because I think I accidentally watched the Bold and the Beautiful Big Brother edition tonight instead of the episode. So sorry about that.
To be fair, Paul, I believe, was on the Bold and the Beautiful, so I can understand the mix-up.
Yes, there was some confusion, but
now
I'll pull it together.
Those of you that might have heard announcements before thought we might have had Ronnie Talbot from Big Brother 11 on the show. Unfortunately, due to some scheduling misconstruments, Ronnie will not be able to make it tonight, but we have someone who has probably been called a rat a much fewer amount of times in her life, Liana Boris. Liana, thanks so much for coming on tonight.
I'm really happy to be here, filling in for Ronnie. I really think I would be part of the brains clique, so I think that this is very fitting for me, although I will not be dressing up like Princess Leia, so sorry about that.
Well, you missed Comic-Con by a couple weeks, so I think that would be a little behind the trend. And poor Ramses, let's pour out some more for Ramses, considering that I did not get to ask him if he felt bad about not making Comic-Con, because I feel like that'd be twisting the knife a little too much, but oh man, as Melissa said, this is probably the best episode of The Bold and the Beautiful I've ever seen, and I've seen so many. This was such an interesting episode of Big Brother.
Yeah, the acting was way better than any episode of Bold and the Beautiful that I've ever seen.
I mean, the two leads was something that, you know, the drama between that, and then there was so much fighting going on, and
yeah,
there was a storm coming in. I feel like there were so many plots converging at once. It really kept me, you know, in depth. I'm hoping that, you know, I can stay home sick from work tomorrow so I'd be able to catch whatever might be happening in the afternoon rerun.
I was hoping for Jessica's twin to come back out of the coma because she shot her wife, you know, just typical soap opera nonsense.
The more you think about it, there are a lot of soap opera-esque twists that I feel like Big Brother used in its earlier seasons. Like, let's remember season 4 was The X Factor, when it was, mm-hmm, oh, here are your spurned lovers come back to haunt you once again. Big Brother 5 had, like,
a brother and sister.
Yeah, reunited, didn't know each other.
And also twins, as you were talking about, Liana. Big Brother,
twins switching out. Really?
Big Brother 8, arch rivals. I think, you know, even though we were joking about the similarities between a soap opera and this show, I feel like it sort of is ingrained in the history of Big Brother, so it's not necessarily a bad thing. Before we get too far off the beaten path here, I should mention that we are live here on robhasawebsite.com, and we are taking your questions about this episode all throughout the duration of the podcast. Gonce Pierre is behind the scenes making sure that we answer any questions you might have about this. Anything moving forward, there is a lot moving forward that I'm sure we're going to be talking about during the live live feeds portion of the evening. Just use hashtag RHAP. And I want to say at the top of the show as well, I mentioned it before, we are going to be live in New York City tomorrow for the first ever Big Brother Live Ultra Extravaganza Showdown. I'm using like Battle of the Block terminology here, with special guests Eric Stein and Johnny Mack. There are still a few tickets left, so if you still have not gotten them and you're in the tri-state area, we'd love to have you there. Just go to robhasawebsite.com/BBLive. Now, the thing that I want to start off with, because a lot happened in this episode, but I feel like the top headline almost is the structure of this episode. Mm-hmm. Melissa, correct me if I'm wrong here. Was this one of the only times in Big Brother since the veto has been instituted that we've had the veto competition but not the veto ceremony in the same episode?
I don't know if it's the first, but it's definitely the only one I can think of at this point. I mean, there's none that come to mind, but it was a little weird. I was not expecting it. But when they were like, I need to convince Jessica to let me use the veto or whatever, it was like, there's like 5 minutes left in the episode. How are we going to cover all this? And then turns out we didn't cover any of it. So it was great.
Well, and even the delayed veto competition just in general, because there was so much going on. You know, we didn't see that. It was like 15 minutes left. I didn't even know if we were going to get to the veto competition.
Yeah, absolutely.
And they cut it down. They cut it so there was like nothing. It was just like everyone got to say one thing. I was like, how did them saying two fill in the blanks end up with 22 points?
Like, I know.
How did this happen?
Sad.
How did it work? So
I thought for a second that maybe the producers of The Challenge hopped on board to edit this episode, and that's why there was a to be continued. Not to shade The Challenge. It's a fun season so far. But yeah, this was so unconventional. I guess I had to chalk it up to the fact that there was so much that happened over the course of this week, which, again, is crazy in theory because, I mean, Liana, what percentage are we at this point that Jessica is going to use the halting hex tomorrow night?
I mean, I guess at this point, I mean, she was going to use it. There was a little bit of conversation, which we saw with Paul and Jessica at the end of the episode, where she contemplated not using it. But, I mean, it had pretty much been set in stone that she was going to use it this entire time.
Yeah,
I think they were trying to keep it in for like max drama.
Right.
Because if by the end of the episode, we saw that Paul didn't change up the nominees, it would have been clear that like, okay, he didn't follow through with his end of the bargain. She's not going to use the hex, you know, or she's going to use the hex. So I think that they kind of tried to leave off the end of the veto ceremony in order to push it to tomorrow so that there's more stuff going on.
And but that being said, I feel like, as you said before, Liana, they were not in a dearth of segments. You know, we did not get a lot of filler going on, because it's crazy to just think about this week, because the fact that this hex is going to be used, it's a veritable non-elimination week. We see over the course of this episode, people start to find out really what the ramifications of this twist are, essentially sort of erasing the nominees from this week. So this week is essentially rendered inert. Despite that fact, it feels like we've gotten like 3 weeks worth of drama over a non-elimination week. This is entirely crazy. I want to ask you, Melissa, do you think that this might be the most dramatic overall congregation start to a Big Brother season yet?
I mean, it seems like it to me. There's always something going on. Like, a lot of the time when you're watching the feeds in other seasons, it's kind of like nothing really happens until right after someone wins HOH, and then until right after someone wins the veto, or until right after someone's nominated, you know, stuff like that, where it's like you have to wait until there's a competition or some sort of event in order for things to happen and fun stuff to watch. And usually the rest of the time it's just people socializing and hanging out. This season, they're picking random days to have giant blowups, giant like craziness. So it's fun to watch, you know, as a feeder, because you never know when something's going to happen, rather than being like, all right, so it's a Monday, I'm just going to sit around and wait until finally Thursday comes along, you know?
Yeah, it's interesting because there's been such a strong element of both gameplay and drama. And so, you know, even though both the veto ceremony and then the nomination ceremony are the kind of the two events that sparked all of this, this week, like you said, Mike, I mean, essentially the strategy is rendered useless this week because Jessica's going to use her hex and it's not going to happen. There was drama to supplant that. So even when we're not having intense strategy talks, we're still getting a lot of drama. I mean, you know, there are people who are saying, oh, the season, blah, 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 you know, complaining about it a little bit. Three out of the four evictions so far have been non-unanimous votes. Dominique was the only one that actually was unanimous. And the past 2 days of feeds have been relatively calm, which is weird. But it's given me a chance to kind of breathe a little bit. So, yeah, I agree. I co-sign that, Melissa. There's so much going on.
Absolutely.
Yeah, because not only is there drama, there's also good gameplay. Like, that's what I really like, is that I like to watch the drama, not so much like just people berating other people, but I do like, you know, the elements of people getting into an argument or whatever, and then that switches up the gameplay. And there's also strong game players, so it's fun to watch. I don't feel like it's necessarily a steamroll at this point in time, which I like. I don't like the steamroll.
If it does feel like we're sort of the past 2 days, we've sort of been in the eye of this Big Brother 19 storm, if you will. But, you know, no loan sharks or pool sharks are hitting us at this moment. So let's hunker down and talk about this episode in particular. Because like what we've been talking about on the feeds, there was a lot of drama. And we start to see the fallout of it between the nomination ceremony and what was going to be the veto ceremony, but was not shown at the end of the show, which was essentially Jody's talk with Paul, which summarily led to Jody's sort of falling out and relationship drama, which took up a vast majority of the episode. And on top of that, we also had Josh going after Mark. Liana, viewing this from the feed's perspective, I know you and Taryn talked about it in a supersized Saturday recap. Do you feel like the edited show did it justice in terms of portraying what happened in that period of time over the course of 42 minutes?
So I would say, all in all, yes. I was happy with the way the show was edited. I was actually really happy that in general, they didn't rely on confessionals, that they just let the drama play out. We just got to see it. I mean, I think that first instance where after Whistlenut gives his drunken monkey confessional, we don't really see any other confessionals from people. It just, we see exactly what's happening. We see the gameplay happen. The one big qualm I have is with the way Josh was edited. Josh was annoying AF, and he was painted to, it seemed like Mark was more of the aggressor when, yes, I get it, he attacks him like, I guess, a drunken monkey, but Josh was being super annoying, and I can see where Mark's aggression was coming from based on Josh's actions. The other thing I will say is after all of that goes down in the kind of the kitchen area, there is absolute insanity that follows. Mm-hmm. Everybody puts on tutus and starts running around dancing. Christmas is up on the sky bridge, like waving her crutches up and down. They're all just singing and dancing. And it is, I mean, I did my best Charlton Heston impression, that like, it's a madhouse. That's exactly how it was. So I'm really upset that we didn't get to see any of that. But on the Cody Jess side, yeah, I do think we got to see the full story.
What about you, Melissa? Do you feel like we should have dedicated less time to Jody and more times to Christmas doing some interesting things on her pain medication? I don't know if this is like a live feed spoiler, but I loved seeing this one gif of Christmas. Is it last night? Like looking in the camera, just going like...
Oh yeah. She's just like licking her lips and like doing weird faces at the camera.
That's fantastic.
Very odd. That's what Percocet'll do.
Yeah, right. No, I mean, I thought that the show edited it really well. I thought that they basically covered it all. And I did like Liana said, I loved how they didn't really include a lot of confessionals because like, we get it. We don't need to see people being like, I can't believe Mark said that. I was pissed. You know, like we get it. We're seeing it happen. Like we don't need to be walked through it through confessionals. And I thought that they did a good job of making Mark look sympathetic in this. I was very worried that they were going to portray Mark as like just this like giant hulking bully running after Josh when Josh was just trying to be goofy or silly. I was very scared that they're gonna like take it that way, but instead, you know, you feel bad for Mark. He's sitting there like just being like, shut up, like stop bullying Cody, you know, whatever he's trying to say. And then, you know, he does get up and charge at him, but then you see the confession afterwards where he's like, I was bullied, and you start to understand it. And you don't, I was a little like confused by the fact that they didn't include then like a Josh confessional being like, I was bullied and I didn't want, because he always talks about the fact that he was bullied and he wants to bully the bully and stuff like that. So I thought that was interesting that they didn't include it. I was glad they didn't include it. But overall, I mean, I thought that it was edited really well. I thought that they kind of dwelled a lot on the Jody stuff. I felt like I could have done without a lot of that because it's like, we get it. Like, she's upset. He wants to make her happy. He doesn't think he can make her happy. Like, now they make up. Like, I don't know. It just was a little much.
Well, let's start by talking about this Jody stuff, but we'll put it in the connotations of really the inciting incident for the drama that befalls them over the course of this episode, which is them approaching Paul in the HOH room. And this is where you guys have explained it on the live feed updates. Essentially, Jessica is angry at Paul for putting them up, basically saying like, hey, I kind of threatened you with this hex before. Why did you put me up? And Paul said, I was trying to call your bluff. And now they're all sort of frustrated that essentially this HOH week is canceled. But it leads to Cody and Paul really nearly coming to blows. I mean, not as much as Mark and Josh, but certainly, you know, I think that Cody, despite being known for maybe being the more robotic member of the House, as we'll see in the veto competition. I think I saw some fire behind his eyes, Liana, when he turned around and went after Paul in that HOH room.
Maybe he's actually a battle bot. You know, like one of those robots that they use for competitions. They've like outfitted him with flamethrowers and those little spinny things. So, I think that Cody obviously feels aggression. I mean, that's one of his few emotions that he does, and sadness, obviously, we learn later. It really comes from the moment when Paul told Jessica to shush. And that's where Cody starts to feel like Paul is attacking Jessica and starts to come at Paul. But Paul was the one who started cussing first. Like, I'm trying to, I mean, this was Friday, which feels like forever ago. I can't say like who was actually the true aggressor in this situation. They were definitely coming at each other and yelling at each other. But I remember on the feeds thinking like this was intense, but not that bad.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think that Paul played it up for sure in his like millions of retells that he told of this event. Like, I felt like I had to hear it over and over again from Paul's side. And it was just interesting to me how he was like, get out of my room, get out of my room. And then Cody leaves the room and he runs after him being like, oh, so you're just going to walk away. It's like, yeah, of course I'm going to walk away. You just told me to get out of your room. I just feel like, I agree with Liana. I don't think any of it was that bad. Like, I felt like people were getting aggressive and getting intense in a confrontation, but I didn't think that any of the behavior was like so outrageous. I was shocked by it. I didn't think Jessica's reaction was warranted. I think a lot of it has to do with the fact that Paul rallied people to get to Jessica and tell her that Cody's this crazy aggressive monster and we're all frightened of him. And that kind of weighed on her mind, you know, because if everybody's telling you that he's the scary, aggressive guy, you start to think that maybe in your own head, like, oh, maybe I'm just not seeing it, but everyone else is seeing it. You're right. Everyone's saying it. So I think that it was played up like just to create this rift between Cody and Jessica.
I really liked when Cody was talking to Paul and saying, you know, oh, you say you know everything about this game, or like you're the best at this game. Paul's like, well, I didn't say it was the best at this game. He was getting shades of Dominique. Well, I didn't say my name. I didn't say I was the best at this game. It's like, well, you heavily implied it.
Well, that's Paul.
With all the vet-splaining.
Yeah, well, that's Paul, though, and that's what I've sort of, like, thought about just sort of, like, watching him on the feeds a little bit, is that, like, Paul likes to, I don't know, he likes to sort of defer any judgment towards him by essentially reflecting the question back to somebody, like, oh, you think I'm a snake? Is that what you think? Tell me why I'm a snake. And then he makes people kind of explain themselves, and I was always like, oh, yeah, your argument isn't making sense. So it's almost like he refuses to answer any sort of questions. They're asking Paul, you know, like, were you going to put us up? Why did you think I was going to put you up? Tell me how you thought I was going to put you up. And then he's like, no, you're not right. I don't believe you at all. Which, again, it's one of these things where, like, I think this season, or at least Paul's gameplay, is an interesting sort of representation of how, especially in the Big Brother house, when you're watching things 24/7, there's a large separation between the house guests and the audience, in that, you know, we're the kids watching over the ant farm. We know exactly what's going on at all times, that we're saying, like, don't believe him! Stop it! We're the people in the movie theater yelling at the people in the horror film, don't go up the stairs! Don't go in the meat freezer! He's there with the machete! The friendship killer!
Like, showman's killer.
Showman's killer, I get. Yeah, showman's killer's there. Coming to next summer. that's the thing, is that, like, and I think, obviously, when we get into the live feeds portion, we can certainly talk about certain activities that I think the community has sort of said, you know, had such a separation from the way the other house guests are acting in sort of a pack mentality. But this is another representation of the fact that, like, we're watching this guy really spin so many ruses through so many deferments and, you know, trying to volley these accusations back onto people. And I gotta say, it's good gameplay, but when you're watching it, it's frustrating to sort of watch other people not be able to catch on at this moment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the horror movie analogy, I think, is so apt, because you are watching, you know, these people who are following Paul so willy-nilly. And I know that cracks are starting to break, but still, it's like, oh, man, sometimes I just want to shake that anthill. I guess, is that the equivalent of, like, a banner plane or a megaphone? Is that the, like, shaking the anthill type deal?
That's,
I don't know.
Shake.
I do have something I want to say about this confrontation as well. First, going back to Paul a little bit, it was interesting to me. You said it before, Liana. Paul hasn't really gotten loud and angry with anybody yet, including Cody, who is like his sworn archenemy. And it's interesting in sort of this confrontation where if you say the words, get out of my room, get out of my room, you could imagine it being yelled by somebody. But Paul was like very insistent, but almost a little monotone. And so it's interesting to see him and Cody kind of go head to head. These two guys that were like both like, oh, what are you talking about, bro? I said, get out of my room. What? I won't leave your room. And just like the most de-escalated fight with the most heightened tensions, such a disparity. The other thing I wanted to point out, weird Paul logic here. I don't know if you guys noticed this. So as you said, Paul sort of processes out of the HOH room, running after Cody. And Paul questions Cody's maturity and asks him if he's 32 or if he's 26. Melissa, do we think 26 is a significant difference in maturity level from 32?
Yes. Oh, my God. It's like just huge, huge. You, a 26-year-old, that's a baby. 32-year-old, you're like basically an old man at that point.
Well, that's because Cody lied about his age, right?
I think it's because he lied and said he was 27 and then he's actually 32, which was interesting because like when he said that on the like first episode when he's like, I'm 27, I was like, did anybody else catch this? Because like, I know he's not 27. I know he's 32. I've seen it in all of his bios. But they didn't have him do like a confessional or anything when he was like to have him do a DR sesh saying like, yeah, I decided to lie about my age because I figured blah, blah, blah. Like they didn't have him like say that at all. It was weird that they were just like all of a sudden trying to pass him off as like 27 years old.
Yeah, I guess they just didn't think that it was important. They're like, well, he's not going to get ID'd anyway. So for, I guess, what, running for the Senate or no? Yeah, running for Congress. You have to be 30, I think. Anyway,
he's
going to have a great campaign.
If he does his commercials like he does the BB Stormwatch, I would
Yeah.
Oh, my God. His little intro where he's just like, I'm not doing
that's
that.
That's so like, good.
That was good. So and, funny.
And this
everyone
is why,
else is like playing it up. And he was just like, no.
And this is why I love Cody on this show, just because, look, Big Brother is such like a goofy, fun show sometimes that it feels like a constant comedy scene. But every good comedy scene needs a crazy person and a straight person.
Yeah.
And Cody is that straight person. Yeah. To just give a no sell to be like, why are we doing this? What? Why do I have to put on this tie? I'm doing a weather promotion. I'm not Howie from BB6. What's going on?
Well, that was just,
it's like, I watch everyone else's intros and I'm like, oh yeah, this is fun. This is great. Haha. This is normal. And then I see his and then I start to like look back. I'm like, wait, yeah, he's right. This is really dumb. Like, this is so ridiculous right now. Like, it makes me think about it myself.
Well, that was him in the Den of Temptation, too. He was just like, no. Like, I'm not having this. But Mike, sorry, I just wanted to go back because Paul did yell at Dominique, like kind of way when they had their fight. But I think that was definitely more of a just he was being loud. Right. So there's a difference between just being loud versus yelling. And this was I do agree with you that this was kind of the first instance, at least, especially that we've seen on the show of him yelling directly. Mm-hmm. So anyway. Sorry, be a stickler for details.
Well, speaking of yelling, let's get to this Josh and Mark stuff because, you know, you thought that that the hot sauce pickle juice incident had sort of calmed the waters, but they were oh so tumultuous building for another conflict to come about. Melissa, can you sort of describe how this seemingly random altercation came about in the midst of all of this Jody versus Paul stuff?
It's honestly that Josh was never over the pickle juice confrontation. That was still a big thing in Josh's mind. So he was saying he was going to make Mark's life miserable. And he was doing that stupid pots and pans thing to the point where he even broke one of the pans. He just never let up on Mark. And so then when Mark made the comment like, oh, shut up, it was like, that was another trigger, and he just uses an excuse to go off on Mark again, which is just like enough already. Oh my God, it's so annoying. But yeah, you know, like I thought that the show portrayed it pretty much as how it was, and you know, Josh just looks kind of psychotic. So
Josh is insane. absolutely insane. Yeah. And that, I mean, I do think that they showed some of that, but Josh was, I understand that it's hard to kind of show the amount because he was yelling for so long, really before Mark ended up snapping. Like I would have gotten on my nerves too, you know, even if, oh my gosh. Yeah. And just like the, him wearing, Mark wearing the tutu also, like there's just something about that situation that I know it's serious. And I know that production came in and told them to get on opposite sides of the house, but it was pretty funny.
Yeah, I mean, again, we're talking about like pure comedy. There's nothing like the ridiculous image of a large, lumpy man in a fluorescent tutu stalking after someone banging pots and pans, singing the theme song for the circus. It's just, it's an insane prospect, but that's what makes Big Brother such a crazy, fun show. We did get to see what happened after the feeds cut off from our end. I mean, it seemed like it wasn't exactly anything juicy. We did not see any sort of hit get landed. We immediately heard someone over the last week, I don't know if that was Rich Meehan or somebody else, saying opposite sides of the house, and then we saw a little bit of stewing from them while Josh continued to sing the circus song while they were being separated. I'm not entirely sure what sort of psychological warfare tactic that was, or whether he was just trying to, I don't know, finish out the song so he gets royalties paid out. Melissa, what did you think about sort of the aftermath that all of us had seen after the live feeds had cut?
I think that Josh was just trying to appear tough and act like he wasn't deathly afraid of Mark charging at him, because he was just like, you could tell that he was like a little hesitant and kind of backing off, but he was still like, oh yeah, yeah, what are you gonna do? Like, trying to act still tough. And it was just like, okay, we get it. You're very afraid. You can.
He's like the
now.
Dog that barks while it's on the leash. And it's like, yeah. Oh, hold me back.
Like behind
hold
the
me back,
gate.
Bro. Hold me back. Exactly. And he's just like, he's barking and yelling. And then as soon as Mark, because when Mark comes at him, you can tell Josh looks afraid, like looks terrified. And well, it was actually the way that the when the feeds cut, like actually cut, it's almost when Mark is cocking back his hand with a pan in his hand. So it actually see that it was a little bit of a letdown. I mean, we know that nobody went home, and I'm happy that actually nobody got hit, but still, you know, like when the dramatic moment actually happened on feeds, it was crazy. But yeah, this really is a Planet of the Apes.
They cut it at just like the right moment for the feeds, because it was like he held the pan up like he was about to smack down on him, and it was like feeds cut, and you're just like, oh my god.
Yeah, talk about a cliffhanger.
So, you know.
That's a soap opera ending. Will Mark, you know, put a Josh-shaped-faced indentation in the pan? By the way, Melissa, I know Taryn talked about these pans being warped beyond all consideration. I'm assuming this incident did not help the case. Did they replace the pots? Has Josh been told? I don't know if this is a live feed spoiler, but has Josh been told he can't use the pots anymore? I'm worried for the pots at this point.
Yeah, right? They're in danger. They're in grave danger at this point. No, I don't. I actually don't know what's going on with the pots. I don't think that he has stopped, though. So that's still kind of a thing that he likes to do, which is so annoying. Like, he needs to come up with a new shtick, because that's just like, enough is enough. Like, maybe the first time it's kind of like, oh, this is kind of clever. And now it's like, just come up with something new. You've got to think of something. There's got to be another royalty-free song that you know.
The pots are actually, they've been bullied, so they're trending on Jokers. They're number one on Jokers right now. Those poor pots.
Wow. Pots
yeah, they're
for
the, AFP. They're the undercats.
America's favorite pots award. I like Melissa's idea. Let's have Josh, I don't know, wrap himself around with the curtains like he's doing Cirque du Soleil silks and singing Pop Goes the Weasel. I think that's my recommendation for
like that would work.
Public domain week on Big Brother.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Absolutely. All right, let's get to this Jody drama, because it's so interesting in that I feel like, and I was talking with, I tweeted this out last week about how I personally felt like Big Brother 19 was the first season I had remembered in a while where, even outside of the showmances, there are so many interrelated pairs in the house, right? There is a big group that is sort of controlling everything at the moment, but broken down within them are really pairs, you know, ride or die people, as Alex would say about Jason. And one of these pairs happens to be a showmance like Jody, but I don't think we've seen this significant of like a falling out or drama between a showmance since what, Brendan and Rachel this early on, Leona?
Yeah, I'm trying to think back, because, you know, BB18 also had a lot of pairs. But, you know, Corey and Nicole never fought because Corey doesn't have a personality. And then I think that James and Nicole, you know, or James and Natalie had a, you know, some tiffs, but I don't remember anything that was nearly this dramatic.
Yeah, I don't either. I think that this is kind of a first because usually, no matter what it is, the showmance is like, okay, even if I'm like pissed at you or whatever, like you're my best ally in this game. I have to keep you around. Like we have to work together. And it's interesting to me that especially Elena with Mark, you'd think that even if the house is telling her, you know, you've got to separate yourself from Mark. You've got to like, this is, you can't be together. It's ruining your game, whatever. She'd be like, okay, I'm going to outwardly separate from you, but we still should have like our own connection. We still should have an alliance, but really she's just trying to like separate herself entirely. And I feel like in this situation, Jessica was kind of trying to do the same thing with Cody. Not really. I mean, they kind of were like separating, but not really going to separate. They were just kind of fighting, but you know, they're your biggest ally. As much as Paul's whole alliance wants to say like, we want to work with you, we're your alliance now. Like they're not. You have one person that's fighting just for you. You need to stick with that person no matter what else, you know, because that's your biggest connection. That's like your tightest bond. And I, you know, it's interesting to me how a lot of people in the house are willing to, while they do have this like pair, they're willing to cut them at a moment's notice if it means that the it's for the greater good of like the big alliance, which is weird.
Well, I think as far as Jody goes, I think in Jessica, you know, the decision for Jessica is, I understand that Cody is somebody who will go to bat for me and is there only for me and will defend me. But that's of, you know, because he's such a liability, is it a better long-term decision to cut him and then try to forge ahead with new relationships? And I think that that's like where her whole dilemma is coming from. And that's what Paul is trying to play off of. Now, you know, what the right decision is, I'm not 100% sure, but I think that that truly is like where the whole issue is coming from.
Yeah, I think that's what she's thinking for sure. It just is like, to me as like an outside viewer, I'm sitting there like, of course you need to keep Cody around. Those people are never going to work with you. So you're either going to be dragged along for a couple weeks while they get out bigger threats and then like just cut like up then, or you can actually have a chance to compete for HOH. Because if she wins HOH this week and Cody's not there, next week she can't compete and no one's going to compete for her. So at least they can kind of, they could potentially trade off HOHs every week until the end if they had to. And so I just feel like it's stupid to just cut someone who will actually not ever nominate you. Whereas everybody else in the house, even Elena, will nominate you.
The thing that was interesting to me about this initial conflict as well, which is, first of all, I do believe that Jessica, it seemed like she was taking out some frustration on Cody initially in the first part, because we, the way this sort of episode was structured was that we saw a little bit of Jody fighting, then the Mark and Josh stuff, the mosh pit, I guess, if you will, for doing that portmanteau for that secret Renegades-esque alliance that I think Taryn was hoping for on one of the live feed update episodes. And then we get more Jody stuff, but Jessica was doing so much referencing to the meta game, which I don't feel like gets very mentioned on the show. Just the fact that like she's saying like I have something I've dedicated to my job and to my family on the outside that I can't be associated with somebody who gets this intense and behaves in this manner. Liana, what did you think about Jessica's thinking there of essentially incorporating this idea that not only is this bad for my game, but this is bad for how people are possibly linking me with you on the
outside. Well, I think Jessica's main priority is still her life outside of the Big Brother house. You know, she's a person who is very focused on what her image is, what her family thinks of her, what her relationship with Cody is going to be outside of the house. So while, yes, she is in the Big Brother house and is playing the game, I think her priorities of her outside life supersede any Big Brother gameplay that's going on. And so I think that the Jody argument comes from not so much the actual gameplay. I think that might have been the trigger for it. But really, I think it has to do with, well, Cody is a hothead outside this game or in the game and will be outside of this game. And so how does that affect Jessica and Cody's relationship further on, like outside of the game? So I think that that's where a lot of this maybe meta game that you're talking about is coming from. It's not really meta game. It's just Jessica being concerned with her perception outside of the house.
Yeah. Plus, I think she was just super frustrated that she got nominated in the first place. And I think that part of the fight came from just her being so fed up with being you know, nominated when she was expecting that potentially she wasn't going to get nominated, considering that she had forewarned Paul about the hex. So I think that she was kind of taking some frustrations out on Cody that didn't necessarily have to do with that super small, short fight upstairs.
That being said, it was also interesting to see Cody so emotionally invested. Now, again, I don't know if this was a matter of editing, but I saw some tears coming from Cody, or at least Cody being extremely emotional, as he was so emotional that he even broke common etiquette and wore sneakers.
Oh my gosh. So I was trying to focus, of course, on the conversation. And all I could think was, Cody, take your shoes off. Cody, take your shoes off.
Like, yeah, those are shoes on the bed.
And then you
shoes
can see the dirt on the like, bottom of the shoes.
I did
well,
not
you know,
like
Cody,
that.
Cody said to Mark, like, I'm not effing winning this game anyway. I don't care. I'm going to wear shoes in the bed if I
want
to.
Oh, my gosh.
To.
I bet he texts in the movie theaters, breaks all other forms of common accepted norms. Cody, gosh, not good.
Not cool.
My other favorite part of the sequence was the cutting between Jessica talking to Elena and Mark talking to Cody. The musical theater person in me, mind immediately jumped to Summer Nights from Greece, and then sitting on the outside talking about everything that happened. Tell me more. Did he bang pots and pans? Melissa, what do you think the chances are that Jody's going to ride off in a car that flies off into the sky by the end of this all?
Oh, 130%.
I'm still waiting for the choreographed song and dance routines with obviously Josh in the back room with those pots and pans. We already have the instrumentals down.
Well, listen, If some Raven gifts have come to light that have shown she can choreograph the dance routines. They'll look a little different than what I've seen from Greece, but she can do the choreography for it.
Yeah, if you can call it choreography. I thought it was so crazy how they kept cutting back and forth. I was like, that's what really triggered my, like, what am I watching right now? Because it was like, they were like, Elena was like talking to Jess, and then all of a sudden they cut. There was Cody and Mark talking and trying to rehash everything, and then they cut back. I don't think I've ever seen that on Big Brother. I mean, I loved it. It was fantastic to watch, but, you know, I've never
I think
seen
for
that
me,
Big
outside
Brother.
Of the whole relationship drama, like nonsense, was the disappearing and reappearing of Mark's Semester at Sea hoodie. Like, it was the I don't know if you guys noticed this, but they would cut to and from, and all of a sudden he's wearing the hoodie, and all of a sudden he's not. So clearly they've edited this conversation, you know, together in a way, but it was like, it was a very good mystery. I could see that being on the next episode of Bold and the Beautiful.
Like, wait.
Oh, yes. I think that's like, if they need to drag out a storyline, then the storyline of Mark's missing
the mystery of the semester at sea sweatshirt.
Yeah, to take front and center stage. Well, let's talk about this veto competition. It is the return of the nasty weather competition, the fill in the blank competition. Unfortunately, no one pulled a Dimitri's from Big Brother Canada 5 and said, hi, my name is your name.
I know.
Insert name here.
Insert name here. But Melissa, still a fun competition to watch?
Not really, just because I didn't really care, because I knew that Jess and Cody had decided not to study. Because they were like, well, we're going to use the hex anyway. We have the hex to use it. So why are we going to study for this? And so really it was just lame. I don't know. And I feel like I also like competitions more when I can kind of see them actually perform the entirety of the thing, or maybe not the entirety, but at least get a sense for like how they're getting points, what they're doing. I feel like all we saw was like two fill in the blanks for each person. And I had heard that the umbrella, you get points for holding the umbrella, but they didn't show that. I don't know. I just felt like it was very much so an afterthought, I felt. They were trying to, like, they were more focused on all the other stuff happening in the episode. They were just kind of like, okay, yeah, we got to include this, so let's just, like, throw it in real quick.
Yeah, I understand that, because at the end, because I'd known how many points everybody had gotten just because after watching feeds, it was like, how on earth did, like, Paul said two answers. How did he get 22 points? To be 100% honest, after all of that drama before, I was like, I just want to see people get hit with floaties. Like, let somebody get hit in the face with a flying shark. I'm totally fine with that. Like, it would have been nice to see all of the rules, but, you know, I'm here for people getting ruined by rain.
No, I did like the sharks and the flying floaties, and I liked the umbrellas just getting torn to shreds. Like, what company makes those umbrellas? They're so
bad. It's like the prop umbrellas.
They cannot withstand anything.
It's like the prop umbrellas. You know, like they have the prop bottles that break really easily. These are the prop umbrellas that break really easily.
The breakaway umbrellas.
Turn into like nothing.
Well, now they can use them for their for the Singing in the Rain that they put on after Grease in the BB house. I can totally understand where you're coming from, Melissa, in terms of the way this was edited, and obviously it had to deal with a lot of other stuff on top of it. But this competition is always so much fun for me. First of all, it's different. It's only been done once before. It tests something else. It tests, you know, memorization while summarily throwing as much crap at them as possible, quite literally. And I don't know, maybe it's like the inherent America's Funniest Home Video fan in me just loves these people getting hit by things. First, starting off with Jason, who looked like Champ from Anchorman, just with his like bald head and his like weird tie ascot. I would feel like he was ready to say whammy about two or three dozen times. But him just getting decked by these pool toys just made me giggle so much. And then, of course, we talked about Cody Cloud not only doing the no sell in the intro, but no selling the obstacles as well. Just like him being like, here comes BB Storm Cameron, get away from me. Oh, here comes BB Storm Jillian.
My favorite was when he sneezed. Achoo.
And for someone who didn't study, he did a great job. Like, that's impressive. He did better than, or at least he, like, tied with the people who, or I guess he got one less than, like, Raven and Kevin, and they did study.
I like the half seagull, half lobster thing. I don't quite get what that was, but yeah, I'm sure maybe that's a creature that's in Sharknado or something like that.
Yeah, absolutely. What did you think about the names, Melissa? Which one was your, did you take down all of the weather-affiliated names of these house guests made news items?
The one that I paid most attention to was definitely Cody Cloud.
Oh, that I thought you were going to say Jessica Puddle.
Well, the Cody Cloud one was just so funny to see him say it. Like, to have him just be like, I'm Cody Cloud. You're like, okay, he clearly does not want to be saying that right now.
Well, I was thinking that, is it somehow related to your character? Because I think Paul was Paul Bluster, which I didn't actually realize was used. Like I've always heard the word used just for someone being kind of loud. I guess thunderous would be a way to describe. But I was thinking, like, if this is a description of your personality, Jessica better feel insulted. Can you imagine being called a puddle? Like, what does that mean? People step on you? I don't know.
Yeah. And considering how much Raven has shown to be emotional in the house, I'm surprised she's not puddled. Though I guess rain makes sense, too, because there's a lot of water coming from her.
Yeah. Kevin Lightning. Who doesn't love lightning? Jason Thunder. He's loud.
Kevin Lightning can be a song in this Grease mock-up that they're doing in the house, too.
Go, Kevin Lightning.
Go, Kevin Lightning. Goes 55. Wrap it in saran wrap. It'll get you down there in a jiffy.
Oh, my God.
I'm excited now.
Well, to finish off this episode before we get into the live feed, I do want to talk about Paul's final card trick, as he says, that his ace in the sleeve, in a way, which is for him to try to put a wedge between Jody and really convince Jessica that it's best for her game if she sends Cody out. After that happens, she will not become a threat anymore. This is where Christmas, you know, does a little bit of talking to her as well. And Jessica finally ends the episode by coming to Paul, making that deal that you mentioned before, 2 weeks of safety, and whoever wins HOH has to put Alex up as a pawn. A little bit of shades. I was thinking of when Ollie tried to make the deal with Dan to essentially be Dan's head of household through proxy, which did not end up working well for Ollie. And you'd have to assume, Liana, that if Paul took this deal, it would not work out well for Jessica as well.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Paul is, especially at this point, the classic snake oil salesman. Like, I imagine he's rolling into town with all of his bottles trying to sell you something. And I would hope that by now, Jessica would have learned that lesson. He has burned you so many times. This is not a deal. And I know that the way the show edited it was to make it seem like she was considering this and that she was actually going to use the hex, like Melissa said at the top of the show. They want this drama. They want it to set up to be some type of cliffhanger. And so I understand why they kept it this way. But yeah, Paul. Oh, Paul, like, just stop.
No, yeah, Melissa,
I like the fact that Paul wasn't just going to lie down and take the week. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like he could have just as easily been like, okay, well, she has this hex. She's on the block. She's obviously going to use it. Like, let's just lay low for a week and just, like, forget it until Thursday. But I'm glad that he took it upon himself to be like, all right, let's see if there's any way I can work this situation to end up in my favor. You know, I thought that I was glad that he tried something. I mean, I like the fact that Jessica's made this like amazing deal for herself, or at least tried to make like negotiate this amazing deal for herself. I mean, it was not something that was ever going to be done, but I liked the idea that she was like, all right, I want this. I want this. I want Alex gone. Like, all right, that's the only way that I'll get that this will work. But I mean, we know that Paul isn't going to stick to that deal. So, you know,
yeah, I think for
what are you going to
do? For me, this is a situation where it's like, oh, well, oh, you both tried. Like, you both get participation trophies. Like, oh, good job. But yeah, nothing's going to come from this.
Hey,
don't
participation trophies are for 26 year olds, not 32 year olds.
That's right. Sorry, I shouldn't bemoan participation trophies, Mike. I'm sure you have plenty.
I have a whole wall of them behind me. I think the interesting thing as well is, if we're talking about Paul sort of leading this gaggle of people and trying to really maintain this facade of everyone working together towards a common goal without people essentially turning on one each other, you need a common enemy. And I feel like one something that could have happened had Paul just said, okay, let's lay down for a second, you know, this week's essentially useless, let's move on and see what happens next, that could get people a little stir crazy and start to turn on each other. And I'm sure we'll talk in the live feed update about how that might be happening anyway. But this, again, at least gives them something to do. And I feel like something that always goes understated in the Big Brother house is that you need things to do, even 5 weeks in. So this is almost like Paul's the camp counselor and he's giving everyone an activity to do. Hey, everyone, let's work together to try to get Jessica to not use the hex in order to send her boyfriend home.
Yeah, I actually really like that. I think that's a good point. And I don't think Paul is doing it intentionally. Like, I don't think that he has the foresight to see it the way that you see it, Mike. But by keeping everybody busy and kind of sending them out on their little missions, that allows them to think about something that is not turning on Paul. And so it keeps them focused and kind of keeps them in line.
Definitely.
All right, let's take some questions from the audience before we jump into the live feeds here. Question from John Marcellus. Wouldn't it have been great if BB19 had brought back Big Boy Howie from BB6 and 7 back to be the weather announcer for the veto comp? I know one person that maybe would not be happy about that, and that was last week's eviction guest, April Lewis. But Melissa, what would you think if they had brought Howie back to host, or to at least to do the voiceover of the BB Stormwatch competition?
I think it would have been great. I would have loved to see Howie. That would have been amazing. Although I feel like the majority of the cast would be like, who is this? Who? I mean, if they already didn't know who Paul was, I doubt that they would know who Howie was. Jedi Howie.
Yeah, they could have mistaken him. It would be like, hey, that was that guy in the competition where we had to sit in the airplane and eat the pate, right? Like, it was that guy, right?
Yeah, he was just a random extra, right?
No, that was Cameron, right? The guy who left first. He did the voiceover for the competition. Like when in BB10 when Brian Hart hosted that one luxury competition, I think. By the way, I feel like there's a little bit of like Cameron shade that's happening on this show, right? Because we talked a little bit about how the storm names are named after the first four evicted house guests. Cameron got BB Storm Cameron, which only lasted for 11 hours. Liana, which do you think was more brutal, that or BB Storm Jillian, which lost a lot of gusto as it went through Tijuana?
Probably the Jillian one is worse, because at least for Cameron, that wasn't his fault. I mean, it was kind of his fault, but you know, he got screwed over by somebody getting evicted early. But I did like when, I think it was Christmas, he was like, oh, now we know his name.
It's so terrible.
Poor Cameron.
Yeah, absolutely. What I will say about Howie, it would be interesting to get him back in a vocal capacity, because no tea, no shade, I think Howie looks a little different nowadays than he did back then in BB6 and BB7. Might have gotten a little bit of work done, just saying. All right, next question from Matthew Wojcik. Did you like hearing Supermarket Sweep announcer Randy West as the BB weather announcer? I don't know if this is going to play on either one of your heads. Do either one of you know what Supermarket Sweep is?
I loved that show.
I did not necessarily watch it.
Whenever I would go to the grocery store and I would be with my mom, I always wanted to pretend like I was on Supermarket Sweep. My mom had to just like sit me down and be like, stop throwing things in the cart, Liana.
It's great.
I was a troublemaker. David Ruprecht encouraging consumerism among Liana Boris and us all. Stephanie Bajois, would they have let Christmas play in this veto, or would they have taken the wind element out? So yeah, we have this sort of always this contingency element, right, of could Christmas participate or could she not? There have been some, like for example, the stop endurance competition, which she participated in. Melissa, do we think, let's put our tinfoil hats on here, do we think that considering it was just standing still, if we just put a trash bag around that
cast. Say, they need to bag up her cast a little.
She has those. She has cast condoms. That's what she calls them. She carries them around in her little bag on her scooter. So I assume she would have just slapped one of those babies on and gone for it.
Yeah. She would have just sat there on her little scooter. I bet they would have let her play. This one's not quite a physical competition.
Oh my gosh. Speaking of Christmas and her scooter, I love it when people are fighting and all of a sudden Christmas just like zooms in on her scooter right behind everybody like, hey guys, what's going on?
Yeah. Or when she gets in a fight and she's like she confronts Mark earlier and she's like, Mark, blah, blah, blah. Like, did you eat my slop? And then after the fight is over, she has to do a back out and do a 3-point turn to leave the fight. She's just like,
And granted,
it's so
again,
anticlimactic.
And granted, again, this is the same person who later that night in the cameras was going,
yeah, licking her lips and doing weird stuff.
So Drugged Up Christmas might be my favorite. And also, I think, you know, the sound editors are happy that they don't have to do all of the jingle bells. Now they can do the scooter squeaking. They can do, I think they did the Awooga horn tonight. So props to this, to the sound department BB19.
Also the sound department. Did anyone else catch that fart noise at the end of Josh's DR?
No.
It was the weirdest thing. He was like, maybe I have a chance with these ladies or something. And then it was like,
oh,
it was very weird. Like, I was like, did anyone else catch that? Is that real?
That was weird that they put that
very
in there.
Weird, very weird. But people are saying that's true.
Pulling a Nayanka from Survivor Nicaragua at the merge feast by putting an audible fart in the competition.
well, that would be if he goes after Christmas because she doesn't have her both legs, really, right? Like that, that's more, that would be more appropriate, but yeah.
You know, well, I mean, we think we did realize that, you know, Josh is sort of just playing a facsimile of a lot of different BB players games between Ika and Evil Dick and maybe a little bit of Dan. Maybe he's now starting to sort of his CPU starting to branch out and download patches from a bunch of different reality shows. Pretty soon he'll be doing a Taylor from Kid Nation yelling about ugly chickens. The Melissa Blot. Melissa, your analog, your robotic analog, speaking of robots, should Josh name his alliance the Pan Smashers? We have not
his
seen
alliance
any
with his pans,
like, yes, the ball exactly. Smashers, but the Pan Smashers.
I don't know if I want to combine ball smashers with pan smashers anytime soon. That is a trip to the hospital and a trip to the adoption clinic, because I do not see sterility in the future. Paul asks, if Paul uses the veto on Jason, does he still need to do a replacement nom? So we won't go into spoilers on the veto competition, on the veto ceremony, but just from a rule perspective, Liana, with this new temptation competition, correct me if I'm wrong here, if someone goes up as the third nominee and they get taken down, nobody goes up, right? It's like when Ramsey's got nominated.
Right, exactly. This is not like the roadkill competition where when the person got pulled off who was the roadkill nominee, there would be a replacement. For this, there is no replacement nominee. It's not like the next worst person in the competition goes up. There's only two nominees remaining if the POV is used on the temptation competition nominee.
All right, one more quick question before we jump into the live feeds. JP Talks BB19 asks, why did Paul pick Kevin for the veto? So yeah, this was an interesting veto draw. First of all, again, it happened in the back half of the episode, which was a little unusual given all the drama. But essentially, since there were, you know, only two people to pick, Paul got to reach in as HOH and pick two people. He picked himself for the first one, and he decided to pick Kevin. Melissa, did Paul reveal on the feeds exactly why he decided to pick Kevin of all people to help sort of go to bat for him, considering how much, you know, if Jessica or Cody won the veto, that could shoot their plans to sunshine?
I'm assuming it's because they studied together. And Paul was basically, with the people he was studying with, giving them answers. So I think that he thought that Kevin knew it best and just was like, also knew that Kevin would do what he wanted when it came to the veto. So yeah, I think that that's basically what it was.
Well, I think part of the reason also is because Paul thinks that he has a lot of control over Kevin. I mean, you can see when it was just this beautiful little editing cut where Paul tells Kevin, we need to remember everything. And then Kevin looks at the camera and does that gym helper, like office,
like
this guy. But I think that because Paul thinks he has so much control over Kevin, I think he thought that Kevin could possibly, if he needed to, throw the competition. And he didn't want to pick Alex, who he also feels like he has a lot of control over, because he was going to try to like make this deal with Jessica. And so if he picked Alex to give her a shot to win the veto, I think that that would have kind of trashed the appearance of that plan.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so we're going to jump into the live feeds portion of this podcast. For those of you that do not want to know what might be shown tomorrow night, you can hop out now. If you're going to be in the New York area, we hope to see you there at the SVA Theater tomorrow with Rob, Johnny Mac, Eric Stein, Taryn, Alex. Everyone's going to be there. For those of you that will not be, there will be a podcast up as soon as possible in the feed for you all to check out. There'll be updates, assumingly, throughout the course of the weekend, and then Rob will still be away for the Sunday show, I believe, so Taryn is going to host after the East Coast airing of the show, so we're back to 9 p.m. on Sunday, so hop out now if you don't want to get into the live feed of it all. Unfortunately, I do not have the spoiler song handy, so no dancing this week. You can just play over the GIFs of Raven dancing in your head. Boy. Actually, that'd be a really fun video if somebody wants to put the Raven GIFs under the spoiler song. It would be great. Very appreciative of that. But let's put in the spoiler song now.
Just imagine Mike dabbing.
The Office of Civil Defense has issued the following message. This is
a spoiler
warning.
A spoiler
warning means that an actual
spoiler
against this country has been detected and that protective action should be taken.
Please don't. That was very 26 of me, very not 32. All right, let's get down to the spoilers, to the live feeds of everything that happened after the veto ceremony. And of course, something huge happened, something magnanimous, something that really invigorated the BB watching audience. And I need to ask this question, Liana: who put the eggshells back in the carton?
The most dramatic thing that happened in the past few days. Yes. Oh my gosh. Oh, Paul was so up in arms. Christmas said we're all going to get diseases. Oh, it's just astounding. Oh my gosh. I saw that. Cody was such a jerk. So awful. Oh.
Cody's reaction was so funny. He's just like, hold that thought.
Yes? Just walks outside.
Let's go. just so, walks okay, outside. So and Paul's sitting there holding the egg carton, just like,
And so this actually does, as trolling as I might have been, this sort of segues into the treatment of Jessica and Cody since the veto ceremony. Melissa, you guys have talked about it nonstop for the past couple days, but for those that are unenlightened, can you give a brief synopsis of what happened specifically on Monday night?
Essentially, the whole house is ganged up on Jess and Cody because they thought that they were like, okay, Jess got most mad at Cody and was most willing to not use the hex on him when she was angry with him because he got angry. So they were like, we need to rattle him. We need to get him angry. We need to make him get unhinged. We need to make him crack, essentially. So it started off with them thinking, like, we want to get Jess to not use the hex on him. And then it turned into, now we want him to self-evict. Now we want him to get so worked up that he punches someone and has to be pulled out of the game. Like, it just got so, so nasty. They just decided to call them out. And first it was Josh doing his stupid pots and pans things. And just, you know, going after them. And then at that point, it was kind of funny because it was kind of like, okay, like, we get it. Ha, ha, ha. It wasn't personal. It was just kind of stupid and ridiculous. And everyone knows, like, Josh is just kind of harmless. And Jess was throwing apples at him and just they were all laughing. And then it just turned nasty because then Paul's like, oh, Jessica, we have a few questions for you. And they made her leave the Austin Powers room. To like be called out by everyone in the kitchen. And it was like Paul yelling at her and asking questions. Then like all of a sudden Alex is asking questions, yelling and asking questions of her. Like, you know, the most important question of all, who took my cat ears? Like, honestly, shut up about the cat ears. Like, we don't care. That doesn't mean anything to the game. Like, that's enough about the cat ears. I'm so sick of hearing about the cat ears. But anyway, so you've got Paul, you got Alex, and then all of a sudden, like, Raven is, like, yelling and calling her the C word and, like, all this stuff. It's just, like, it's ridiculous. And Raven did her whole fake cry thing. I'm sorry, I'm doing a horrible job of, like, going through this sequentially, but it was just, like, the whole thing, like, blurs together as just, like, a horrible, awful event. So, like, there's just a lot of different elements that all come into play, but Paul basically rallied his minions to go after Jess and Cody in particular, to try and get him to crack. They were going to question his military service. They were going to, you know, bring up stuff from his past. they were going to try and incite him to violence. And it was just in such poor taste. Then when Cody and Jessica try to get away from it, they follow them out into the backyard so that Raven can start yelling at them. And at one point she like tried to like make Cody feel bad by telling everyone that Jess said he had a big dick. Like, it was the weirdest thing I've ever heard in my life. Like, Raven was like, she was cussing. Paul was like, oh, let's let my dogs out. And she goes, woof, woof, like mother effer. And she's like, flipping them off. And it was just like, it was just so, it was so uncouth, the whole thing. It was just awful. Sorry, that was like a very long long discussion of it, but a lot happened. It was just horrible.
Yeah, so the entire altercation, I mean, essentially this is like entire feeds of Monday afternoon after the veto ceremony. And it starts with Raven is in a room talking with, I believe, Jason and Kevin, and maybe Alex is in there, I can't remember, but Jason makes a hand signal that is notifying everybody who's talking that Jessica has entered the room. Jessica sees the hand signal, and then this is kind of the spark that starts all of the whole cascade of events. And she calls out Raven and talks to Raven for a while. Then this is where, just like Melissa said, Paul starts to rally his dogs, his troops, and get them to come after Jody, specifically Jessica, and gets Raven to fake cry, has Jason go in there and have a conversation. And then Christmas starts saying we need to call him out for Cody's service, like saying that it's fake. And Matt decides to show up and have some sense and say like, oh, it's stupid to attempt to get a man who's killed people to crack, which good on you, Matt. Like, that is that is solid advice. But just like Melissa said,
Christmas gets mad.
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
And Christmas gets mad at Matt for saying that. And she gets like really aggressive. And like, everyone was just like in such a weird place that day. It was the weirdest Monday I've ever had. And I wasn't even there.
Yeah. And this is the thing, is that the feeds from Friday after the nomination ceremony, in my opinion, that was like fun drama. This is bullying, unfun, uncomfortable drama. Like, I know that Rob was making fun of me for saying like, oh, I watch Big Brother for all the strategy. It's like reading Playboy for the articles. It was like, well, I've seen enough naked pictures of people. Like, I would rather get back to reading those articles. I need to catch up on Yacht Weekly column. Like, let's do this, because this is insanity.
No, I totally agree. It's just... It hurt me to watch it. I was yelling at my screen, just like, everybody shut up. It was just so horrible. It's not fun. It's when you have 8 people, 10 people, whatever, targeting 2 people, and those 2 people are not reacting, are not saying anything, are trying to leave the room, and you keep following them and hounding them and dogging them and trying to get them to crack. It's awful. And not only that, it's not like, okay, well, they all were just kind of up in arms. They were all kind of like just, you know, boisterous. No, like, they specifically used the words, we're going to harass them. We're going to harass them for 4 days. That's what they kept saying. And they all thought it was hilarious and super fun. And it's not fun or hilarious. It's mean. It's cruel.
Yeah, Paul used the word bully. So I just imagine all of the DRs with Mark crying with his semester at sea hoodie.
And honestly, they're all sitting up there on their high horses saying like, we're the good guys. We're going to bully the bully. We're going to give him a taste of his own medicine. No, you're the bullies. You guys are the bullies. Cody and Jess are not doing anything to anyone right now. They're literally just trying to survive this week. And it's not good to do tit for tat and fight fire with fire and be like, well, if you're going to bully me, I'm going to bully you. Like, that's just, you don't do that. That's just so childish. The logic behind it is just so childish.
Yeah, I mean, Cody and Jessica obviously aren't without their own transgressions as far as making comments about trans people. I guess I didn't really think about that wording. And, you know, Jessica has made some comments about women's body sizes and things like that. And so, you know, like Lita pointed out, like, they're not... you know, they're not the like complete underdogs that maybe we necessarily want to paint them as, but I completely agree with you, Melissa. Like, this is just so uncomfortable to watch these 10 people teaming up against 2. And I think it was Jason said that he's not a big fan of the 10 against 1. He compared it to punching somebody who's half your size. But he also said, oh, I'm just going to continue to join and watch in because I'm a hypocrite. It's like, okay, Jason, like, thanks to trash any goodwill you might have earned with that statement.
Yeah, no, it's honestly, like, it's sad to me that nobody is willing to stand up to them. I get that it's a game. I get that it's like, okay, they don't want to ruin their own position in the game. But, like, enough is enough. Like, sometimes you just have to stand up and just, like, defend people. You have to do what's right sometimes, even though it might hurt you in the game. I liked that Mark kind of tried to say something. And, you know, he didn't really do a great job of it, but he did try and say something, and he was willing to talk to them afterwards. And even Elena, she went into there and was like, look, like, I'm sorry I didn't say anything. I wanted to desperately, but, like, I couldn't do it for my game. And everybody else is just it's just awful. It was so hard to watch. It was so hard to watch. That's not the Big Brother that I love.
Yeah, and it came down, sorry, Mike, we're like taking over the show.
I'm so sorry.
And it, you know, it comes down to production really stepping in and kind of getting mm-hmm. them to cool down. That and the combination of there was a megaphone yeller that came out by the wall of the Big yeah. Brother house saying something along the lines of Paul's a bully, America loves Jess. And so this is kind of where there is a discussion from the 10 about, which is stupid, it's their image and how they're being portrayed. I was like, yeah. No, you should not want to do this because this is a mean thing to do. But yeah. I guess if it gets you to stop, like, that's, you know.
And they're sitting there like, oh, I wonder if our edit must be really bad. Like, they must be editing us to be the bullies. Like, I'm sorry, they don't need to edit anything. We can see what you're doing on the live feeds, and you guys are being bullies. Like, you have to rely on production for that. That's you. You're doing that to yourself.
So, a couple things. I'm still on the podcast, by the way. The chat room is like, did Mike disappear? Did Mike turn into a mat and go grab some cereal?
Sorry.
I mean, suffice it to say, no, I mean, you both, I think, made some very good points. Suffice it to say, I mean, this has left the internet in an uproar. I think an uproar would be an understatement. I think this is probably the most controversy, or at least the most fired up we've seen the Big Brother community, I would argue, since the flip the bed gate in Big Brother 15. The thing about the difference between those, I would say, I can't really compare them. They're more like apples and oranges, because I do think Big Brother 15 was rooted in some values that are not exactly comparable to what they're doing here. This seems more like a general pack mentality, us versus them. I think what some people are really taking fault with is the fact that, like you mentioned before, this is 10 against 2. It's not Evil Dick following around Amber and Dustin with the pots and pans. It's not mm-hmm. Russell torturing would-be guest Ronnie, saying that he's a rat for a week straight. This is a group of people ganging up on two people. And like Liana said, and like Lita said as well, I mean, that these are not exactly saints that we're talking about either. It'll be very, very interesting to see how they portray the fight tomorrow. And I'm sure we'll mm-hmm. be going to be talking about that as well, as to whether they're going to be really building this positive edit for the two of them. We saw a lot of them this past week. And I mean, also, they're not really in a great position. If they use the hex and someone besides maybe Mark wins next time, they're going to get split up. So maybe they're trying to get as much Jody out of it as possible. But it's tough to see. And I think, honestly, your mileage may vary on this. But I think it also comes down to this general talk in reality television about this concept of the line and what crosses the line. Because despite the general outrage, I have seen some dissenting opinions here and there. Some people saying, you know, oh, this is a game. They should be able to bring up whatever they want to. You know, some people, I think, took a lot of exception with the attack on Cody's military service, saying, you know, that's a service that Cody does to the country. Some people are saying within the confines of the house, all bets are off. I know alumni were sort of torn on this as well. So I'm not here to sort of disparage any sort of side that you might be taking on the issue. I think it honestly comes down to what you personally believe is too much to bring into the game of Big Brother, if at all. Melissa, what do you think about that?
Yeah, I mean, I think anything personal is too, it's supposed to be a game, and I don't think they should be bringing personal things and personal attacks into it. I think that if things are rooted in strategy and rooted in, like, gameplay, like, or people getting angry that because so-and-so put you on the block or because you lied to so-and-so, like, that's fine with me. But then taking outside stuff and bringing it in, like, I don't like that at all. And also in regards to the edit, I don't think there's any possible way that they're going to be able to, the editors would be able to paint Cody and Jessica as the bad people in this scenario, because they didn't even say anything. They did not react at all. They just sat in the hammock. They did not react. And I think that that is a to their benefit. I think that now the editors don't have any fuel to add to like their fire, and it can't be portrayed as like a two-sided fight. It was definitely one-sided. And if anything, the only time that they did react was when Jess was able to successfully like tear down every single person's argument when they all came at her. It was literally like a successful version of Josh's argument where he was like, next, next, next. She was doing the same thing, but she actually was just like, I'm going to like, okay, let's answer this one at a time. No, no, no. Next, does anyone have any other questions? It was so great. I thought she really held her own, because when it comes to me, at least like when someone confronts me with something, my first reaction is to have just tears. Not intentionally, but just like, I cannot stop my eyes from watering, no matter how like hard and aggressive I'm trying to be, the tears will come. So I was very, very impressed with how she was able to hold herself in this whole argument.
It's only because you were cutting onions though, right? That's like the only
tears. Obviously, yeah. It was just like holding onions in her hands. Like, yeah.
Well, so 2 points. I mean, I think one, when it comes to the editing, I co-sign everything. I think also the fact that the show kind of started to paint them as Jody to be this sympathetic couple. Mm-hmm. They're kind of struggling with these issues. And now this in this coming episode, we're going to have the whole house like hounding, I guess, to go with the dog metaphor again, on them. And so I think that that's absolutely going to come into play. And then I had a second point, but I forgot, so I'm going to stop talking.
I have a point.
Perfect.
Another important thing that to note is that Paul is the ringleader in this whole thing. Like, the whole fight, you saw that when Cody and Jess walk out the door to go outside and try and leave the fight behind, Paul, first of like, Raven's yelling after them, calling them the C word. And the second the door closes, when Cody and Jess are out of earshot, Paul kisses Raven on the head and is like, that's my girl, that's my girl. And then he goes, all right, let's go. Josh, get the pots and pans. Let's follow them out there. Let's go. And he like directs everybody out there to attack them again. And that, but then once they get out there, Paul like lets other people like Raven kind of take the spotlight in terms of like the fight. So it's very clear that Paul is leading the charge for this whole thing. And it's just, it's horrible. It's horrible. And if they try and edit it to make it so that Raven is not a part of this, or Alex is not a part of this, because we know that they were trying to paint Raven as this like cutesy girl and Alex as this, you know, this awesome, you know, figure who we can all get behind. If they try and edit those people out of the fight, I'm going to be pissed, because I want to see those guys go down in flames on this episode. I want the casuals to hate them.
They'll try and like CG the Mai out like they did with Polly in the Ziggy Marley concert from last year. I remember what I was going to say, Mike, actually, to address your comment about, you know, how much is too much to bring into the game. I think that there's a lot of talk of this being psychological warfare, which I totally get. And I think that that is an element of Big Brother and Survivor. But the end goal was to get Cody to self-evict or to punch somebody. And in my opinion, that's not within the confines of the game, right? You can try to psych somebody out to try and mess with them for a veto competition or something like that. But this is just pushing it so far that the strategy was to get them to evict, which is, I think, outside of the rules of the game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's, I believe, what Howie was trying to do in Big Brother 6, right, for a while. I remember, like, if there was going to be a hashtag during Big Brother 6, it would probably be, like, friendship DOR, essentially, like, Howie trying to put, after Kacer got evicted for the second time, them trying to put them on blast in order to try to get them to quit the game. And I do think that production was able, granted, you know, it was after everything had blown up, but they finally did sort of pull Josh and Paul specifically aside and told them, hey, enough is enough. You cannot do this to specifically incite violence in people. So they did come back, and I think now they're sort of doing like a kill them with kindness thing. Is that correct, Melissa? Just sort of now treating them with the most pleasantries they can and try to ignore any sort of negativity that they brought upon them a couple days ago?
Yeah, I don't see them treating them very kindly. I just see them kind of acting as if nothing really happened, but not treating them in a kind way. No, I mean, they're just like, they're not attacking them outright, but they're also not trying to socialize with them. I guess like Raven earlier asked if they wanted, they wanted chicken tacos or something she was making. But honestly, like there's no turning back from that at that point. Like once you've like been attacked like that, it's like, it's not very easy to just be like, oh, we're all sunshine and rainbows now. Everything's over. Everything's all under the bridge, even though you kind of have to do that in the game.
It's cordial. That's how I would describe their interaction is that they're not necessarily being friendly, but they're just being like cordial and polite.
Well, let's talk about how tomorrow's episode may show. We already talked about how the big brouhaha may be edited. And I will say, on top of all that, I do think the person that surprised me the most in this conflict was Raven, who came out of there like a banshee, much like a banshee she would be hunting with her ghost hunting troop. So considering how integral she was in a lot of the invectives hurled, it would be interesting if they try to include her out of the festivities tomorrow. I don't know if they'd be able to, but I was wondering leading up to this, because I assume that, yes, Jessica's probably going to use the hex, even though Paul sort of is, again, trying to pull off this maneuver. But what are they going to fill the hour with? You know, are they going to stop the eviction and then play out that next Edge of Age competition live? Are they going to show the fight, do a little bit of the ceremony, have Jessica stop it, and then go from there? Melissa, what is your leading theory as to how tomorrow night's episode is going to run?
Yeah, I think most of the episode is going to be, most of the episode is going to be focused on the big fight. And then I think they're going to just have the eviction with Jessica standing up and using the hex, I guess, and kind of just go from there to the, just straight to the HOH competition. And then maybe have like Julie ask them questions afterwards. Although I don't know if Julie will want to ask live questions anymore after she was totally stumped on Jessica's answer last time. That was the funniest thing. It's like, I've never seen Julie just like, she just like was stunned into silence.
Well, hopefully they uploaded a new program for the Chen bot. So now it's like improvise EXE.
Yeah.
Get ready to run. I think as far as the HOH competition, the house guests earlier today were given like golf clubs, golf balls. And then there was some sort of like sort of mini golf course, but they were able to place obstacles down and were trying to get like balls in holes. So this was sort of similar to the BBOTT competition that we saw, the golf veto. And so my assumption is that that's sort of what this HOH is going to be like. And it's not a competition that they can really play out on the episode, unlike a questions competition. So my assumption is that we're going to see the beginning of the HOH and then hopefully the rest of it will be on feeds.
Yeah, I'm kind of frustrated that they're doing this like chance competition for like one of the most important HOHs of the season. It's like they couldn't just hold this off for like maybe two more weeks or something. It's just kind of annoying.
Big Brother's not rigged.
Yeah, not rigged.
Well, that being said, again, Melissa, 100% chance that Jessica uses the hex come tomorrow night? Or is there any sort of things ruminating in the house right now that she still might not use it and chance Cody going home? Because I should also mention, for those of you that do not know, since the veto ceremony was not shown on an orthodox perspective on this episode, Paul removed Jason with the veto, so now it's Cody and Jessica up against each other. Jessica is 100% going to use the hex, correct?
I mean, yeah, at this point, Jessica's going to use the hex. I don't see any way that she won't.
Well, and even if so, if she doesn't use it, Paul and co were actually talking about voting out Jessica. So it wouldn't be Cody that would be going home if they do end up going to a vote. But I mean, that's besides the point because she's going to use it anyway.
I have a couple of questions in the chat about the golf. Do you think there's a chance, Liana, that this could be the temptation competition instead of the HOH competition?
Yeah, I mean, it's possible. We weren't explicitly told that this was going to be for the HOH. The general assumption was that was the case because it was given, you know, the day before the HOH competition, which is going to be tomorrow. But yeah, I mean, it's entirely possible. We don't know for sure.
All right, let's take some questions before we wrap up this podcast. Matthew Woe just asks, if Jessica does not use the hex, is this the dumbest move ever made on Big Brother? Will Julie hit her with the card afterwards? So let's put ourselves in an alternate universe where Jessica decides not to use the hex. Liana, you were just saying that assumingly Jessica would probably go home there. Melissa, would this be in the pantheon of dumbest Big Brother moves ever made?
I don't know if it would be the dumbest move ever made, because I do see reasons why she might want to not use it, just like from what people are telling her. I mean, it'd be very frustrating. It's like going home with an idol in your pocket and Survivor. But I could see the logic behind not using it. But at the same time, like, she better use it. Like, I need to see her use it.
I think Marcellus is still worse.
Yeah,
I know, poor Marcellus. But like, is this better or worse than Luan if she doesn't use it?
Yeah, I guess it's a similar sort of stage of the competition, right? I mean, I don't think Jessica, but Jessica isn't under any pretenses that if she doesn't use the hex, I don't know, the hex will come back with superpowers and she'll get doubly powerful now can nix any eviction for 8 weeks. So maybe just because she knows exactly what she's in for, the question is it stupider that she knows or stupider if she didn't know? It's really a game of inches here, but I'd say if she's gonna use it, but if she did it, that would be absolutely catastrophic. Let's go to a question from Survivor Reacts. What will they show on the TV behind Julie when they open Thursday's episode if we don't know the final nominations yet? That's an interesting thing. So since we haven't seen the veto competition yet, Melissa, any chance that they'll have Jason sort of sitting there third wheel on the side besides Jess and Cody, just to make it seem to the audience, oh, we don't know what happened yet with the veto ceremony?
Yeah, it's possible. I mean, it's totally possible to just have him sitting there. Or, I mean, they might just not even show the house guests at that point. They might just kind of just show Julie walking out the door or whatever. So I think that either way, oh, well, it'll be there for like 5 seconds.
Yeah, I think that's my assumption, just because this is an anomaly when it comes to editing, that I don't think the opening of the show is going to be that similar to what we've seen before. It's either going to be, I don't know, the logo of Big Brother or, a freeze frame of Cody making a stupid face. I don't know. We'll see.
All right, let's go to a question from Big Brother 19. After hearing Jason and Kevin talk about Paul being like Napoleon, is his game closer to ending than he thinks? Liana, tell me a little bit about this Napoleonic comparison that Kevin and Jason were making.
Well, if he is like Napoleon, he's in for a super cool grave. I've been to it. It's giant. Very Napoleonic. Not like he's going to die like Raven's going to die, but in the sense of his game, like his game coffin. Never mind. Anyway, I can see that he is along the same lines of Pauly, and people have made this comparison before. Somebody playing so hard, so fast, and you know, Derek is really the only person who has been able to maintain this kind of control throughout the entire game. I think of BB17, and I was like, go girl, Shelly, you go run this. And no, of course, you know, she goes right before jury. So I can see Paul being in a similar situation where things are going to start crumbling. We started to see the cracks somewhat in his alliance, but at least for the next week or so, I think that he's in an okay position.
Melissa, what about you? Who do you think would be the most likely? I know I'm conflating world leaders, but who will be the Brutus to Paul's Julius
Caesar? I mean, I'm kind of thinking that maybe this is wishful thinking, but I'm kind of thinking that Christmas might be the one to lead a rebellion against Paul. I mean, I don't feel necessarily like she is totally under his spell. Maybe that's just me being very hopeful, but I feel like she's willing to do what she has to do. But I think that she could turn it around and go against Paul if she sees that Paul maybe is not quite on her team.
I think my concern for Christmas and Elena is the fact that they've demonstrated some, like a modicum of independent thought, and that's put them on Paul's watch list. And so, you know, hopefully if they can actually pivot, not to use Paul's language, and make that turn and go against him, I think that would be good. The person that I'm the most interested in for several reasons is Kevin. So other day was having this conversation about Jim Jones, the cult leader who is like the reason why drinking the Kool-Aid is a thing, because he had all these children drink this poison Kool-Aid that killed them all. He's telling the story. And then he says, man, wouldn't that be crazy if somebody in the house were doing something like that? Wouldn't you want to go against that? And I was just like, are you doing this on purpose?
Like, whoa.
I thought, wait, like, what? Like, you make jokes about loan sharks. Like, this is not something, you know, I would expect from Kevin. But I look at the evidence and he's got really great gameplay. He can, take a conversation and sort of, I guess like turn it around to disarm people, flip the topic. He pinned the $25,000 on Ramses. You know, his redirection of conversation is just so strong. And I'm really, really hoping that Kevin is the Brutus of the season.
Yeah, I think what's going to maybe come crashing down for Kevin is, like was talked about in the beginning of this season, I mean, Kevin really indulged in Paul a lot of his own secrets between, you know, the $25,000 and all of these other things. So the question is, you know, Kevin's essentially building a giant Jenga tower with the amount of lies he's been maintaining with his relationships. If he decides to poke out one little stray piece, well, Paul then sort of views that as retribution and decide to out Kevin there. And as a result, they sort of shoot across the bows at each other. Because I do agree. I think even socially, he's in a great place as well, where I think he gets along with everybody. I don't know how much his longevity for the game is really going to fare well for him, because I think that he can do well socially. But let's also remember that, like, the latter third of Big Brother is very competition heavy, and Kevin's in fantastic shape for a man of his age, but he's not great physically in comparison to some of the other people in the house. I think we showed that maybe mental competitions, at least this one, was not entirely his thing. So I think he still has a little bit of a tough row to get there over someone like maybe even Jason, his partner in crime. But I do agree that I think if there's one sort of person that you can throw into the wheels of Paul's cart to upset it and to have all the apples fall out, that Big Meech will then throw at his kidney. I think Kevin might be the one to do it. Let's take a question from Keller. Go ahead.
Sorry, can I just say something really quick?
Yeah.
Everyone in the chat is saying that, like, I hate Paul and I'm so biased and blah, blah, blah. I do not hate Paul. I don't hate him. I think that he's playing a great game, but I don't like to see someone steamroll the whole season. I love the opposition. I think that I'm very glad that Paul is on this season because he creates this you know, opposition. He creates this dynamic where you have this side versus that side. And I've always loved to see that. So right now he's in power. I want anybody to go against him. I want people to turn against him. I want there to be some sort of adversity for him. And then, you know, say Jody wins HOH for like 2 weeks in a row or whatever, then I'll want Paul's side to win HOH. Do you know what I mean? Like, I don't like to see one side just take it the entire way through. So right now I'm frustrated with Paul. I want other people to, you know, go against him, but I do see that I can respect the game he's playing and I can see that he is playing a good game. Although I will say that this week, like, I don't like that behavior. I don't like the whole thing from the fighting and the targeting them and the, you know, just the horrible, like, harassment. I don't like that. I don't think that's good gameplay and I don't respect it, but I think overall I do respect him as a game player. Just had to throw that out there.
All right, let's take this question from Keller Hope. Who came out looking better in their fight, Jessica or Raven? A little bit of an obvious answer, but I'll throw it to Liana just in case a rogue answer comes out. Out of that, I don't even call it a fight, that the Raven and Jessica specifically seemed like more of a one-sided screaming match, but Jessica definitely came out with the upper hand in this situation, right?
I think when it devolves into you making animal noises, you've lost. So I think Raven absolutely comes out looking worse. You know, she has not been the darling that I think the show sometimes wants to paint her with, because she's been last on Jokers for a while now. Mm-hmm. She clears rooms. People, I think, are kind of annoyed with her. I mean, both in the house and also the audience watching. And so Raven is just, you know, girl, bye.
Agreed.
Quote Brent.
That's a good question from Who Cares? Of all the happenings in the house, which do you think should not have been edited out? So I guess I'll take this one to Melissa. Is there anything that has happened in the past few days between what was shown now and what we're assuming is just going to be the fight tomorrow night? Anything else that you feel like should be put on the TV show just to sort of give viewers an additional glimpse into what's going on amidst all of this chaos?
That's really tough. I mean, there's nothing really that comes to mind. I think overall the editors have been doing a really good job this season and, you know, showing pretty much as best they can what's been going on in the house. So, I mean, there's nothing really from this past week that should have been in this episode today. At least I don't think so. Did you see anything, Liana?
Well, I'm just trying to think they showed a lot of the Cody Jessica fight, but we didn't really kind of get to see this escalation of Elena and Mark mm-hmm. over the past couple days.
Yeah. The Rizzo and Kanicki in the Greek scenario.
That's so true. Right.
Sticking with that metaphor.
Oh, God.
I think that Elena has been trying to push Mark away for a while now. And we just sort of see a little bit of this when I think they're broken up as far as I understand. Again, not great at relationships, but I'm pretty sure they're broken up. Although they spend time, like, I think they sleep in the same bed. I don't know. They're a hot mess, but I would like to see more of their relationship explained.
What do you think the chances are then that they might take some of that footage, since they know that obviously both of them are safe for this week, and push it to next week when maybe if there is some sort of, you know, there's some sort of drought of drama that goes on, especially after all the chaos that happened this week and them kind of getting admonished for it, they decide to sort of shape that narrative there, Melissa.
Yeah, that's totally possible. And I mean, in regards to the Marlena stuff, I really would like to see some DRs, not necessarily from Mark, because I feel like we already know how he feels, but I'd like to see some DRs from Elena, because I'd like to know whether she, like, actually is not romantically interested in Mark at all and is using the game as an excuse to, like, get him away from her, or if she does actually have romantic feelings towards Mark, but, like, she is feels like for the game he's not good for her, so she's trying to push him away. Like, I want to know what her motivation is, because either this is coming from internally or this is just coming from Paul and Paul telling her that she needs to separate from Mark. So I would love to know if this is actually something she really feels or if this is just Paul's direction.
I'm pretty sure Elena doesn't have romantic feelings for Mark. And I have thought about this before because, you know, so like when there's somebody who likes you and you don't like them back, but you don't want to be mean to them, but you're trying to get them to distance yourself. Like you're trying to get them to go away and stop bothering you. It's like she's dealing with that, but then in the confines of the Big Brother house where he is an ally and someone who will protect her. And so, you know, she's really trying to do this delicate balance of like pushing him away, but still in case she needs him, have him there. Mm-hmm. So it kind of puts her in this very awkward position.
Yeah. And I think that Elena is also in a super interesting position as well, because she's sort of like the Colossus of Rhodes straddling two different lands at this point between, you know, the Jody with Mark sort of, you know, hanging around them as well. And again, I guess I want to go back to what we said about the fight, that it wasn't really 10 on 2. It was more so like 9 on 2 with one sort of person in the corner being like, guys, leave him alone. So I don't want to, you know, hang Mark out to dry in that regard. But she is still sort of like friendly with those people. She was left out with them with the Ramsey's vote. But at the same time, she's getting more ingrained with Paul as well. And as we're talking about this group eventually splitting apart, I think Elena's place in it is going to be very, very interesting. Let's take a couple more questions here. John Densford, Dan Dalla, holla for a dollar. How much credit does Paul deserve for how lit the feeds have been this year? So, Liana, we talked about how dramatic the feeds have been. How much are we attributing that to Paul's presence in the house and what he's been doing in the game?
It's interesting because when the season started, everyone was so excited. Oh my gosh, all newbies. This is going to be so much fun. Then Paul gets brought in. We're like, oh no, not a vet. We don't really know what the season would have been like without Paul. So it's hard to make predictions of, you know, how much is Paul actually contributing to these lit feeds. But I will say he has been the instigator in a lot of these circumstances. And so I think that he does deserve some of the, I guess you would say, credit when it comes to how lit the feeds are. Now, lit for both good and bad reasons, I guess. But I mean, it was Paul who was trying to get Josh worked up, who got Josh, you know, on the warpath. So, you know, I guess like a lot of the gameplay this season, it falls on Paul's shoulders.
Mm-hmm. Melissa, what do you think?
Yeah, I totally agree with that. And I mean, it's interesting to see. I mean, think back to when Derek was the one in Paul's position where he was controlling everyone. And anytime there was some sort of confrontation that was going to happen, he like calmed everyone down and just like made everything super boring all the time. And Paul is like the complete opposite of that. Whereas where someone wants a confrontation, he like works them up, gets them into a frenzy and gets them to confront them. So, I mean, it makes for interesting feeds, but it's just, you know, it can get kind of tiring after a while when the same person gets riled up, aka Josh. But I will say that, yeah, he's basically driving the game this season. So, you know, it's on.
They're not gonna have any pots and pans left by the end of the season.
Seriously, I wonder if they'll give them more.
Eating out of their hands or something by the end of it, like cave people. All right, last question from the Jimmy G. I'm picking it because apparently Rob never does. So we're doing things differently on this version. Is there any way that anyone besides Paul doesn't win? So I guess going in line with the fact that Paul's driving the narrative, but that being said, as we've talked about on this podcast, Liana, does Paul have a clear path to the end game at this point?
Well, I mean, this is still early in the game. We haven't even made jury yet. The jury still has not happened. It's not happening this week. So I think that we're just so far out. It's easiest to see Paul's path because it's the clearest if he continues to play things well. But this has been brought up several times. We were saying this about Pauly. If Pauly wins, is he going to be one of the best Big Brother players ever? So there's so much more game to be played. There is a long way for Paul to fall if it were to happen. So I'm not counting my dogs before they
bark.
Yeah. I don't know what that analogy is.
Makes sense in the context. Yeah, no, I mean, I agree. I think that it's really hard to tell because you've got a similar situation with Pauly where all of a sudden he had this massive downfall that nobody foresaw in the beginning. And then you've also got Derek, who I thought there would be a big downfall. And instead, he just made it all the way to the end. So at this point, it's really hard to tell. And it's insane to me that we haven't even gotten to jury yet. Like, that's crazy. I feel like I've been watching this season for like at least a year.
And I think we actually might be reaching around like the halfway point, as crazy as that is. I think we're going to reach like day like 45 or 46, and they scaled back the number of days. I think they're only doing like 92, maybe 93 this
only.
Year. Yeah,
only.
So, well, but it's crazy though, thinking that we're already half through, considering so much stuff has happened. And I mean, this might be me being optimistic, and I know that people have sort of disparaged those in Paul's alliance for saying, oh, they just want to get to jury, they just want to get to jury, but I mean, you brought it up before, Liana. Even last season, people were saying at this point, like, oh yeah, Pauly's got it on lock. And then we get this flip at what, like the final 10 when Zakia was up on the block? And that's when Pauly's game came crashing down. So, I mean, I feel like while people might be saying, oh, these are the mindless drones of Paul that are drinking the Kool-Aid and literally barking for him, I think that enough of them have a mind about themselves that once they sort of get the smell of money in their noses, mm-hmm. they're going to be rabid about it. And they're going to say, okay, here's the guy that has been winning, has won, what, like 40% of the competitions so far. This is someone who is clearly going to win if they make it to the end. They're depriving me of $500,000. I need to take them out. That's what made me so high on this cast to begin with, is that we had the chance of so many big players that are ready to do things to win this game. And I'm hopeful that those mentalities still stick through. I want to ask you both, just before we get out here, since I don't think we're going to see the HOH competition, or at least an HOH crowned at the end of tomorrow night, but Liana, is there anyone that you would want to see win HOH next time in particular, from either a strategy perspective or a narrative perspective or an entertainment perspective?
Yeah, I am absolutely hashtag team good feeds. So Mark, I think, would be pretty mm-hmm. interesting. I think Elena would also be really interesting to kind of force her hand and see where she sits. Jody, obviously they're there, but I think I'd rather have Mark or Elena.
Melissa, what about you?
Yeah, I'd like to see either a member of Jody or Mark, because I think it'd be very interesting, because Mark has said that he is not going to put either Jess or Cody on the block. So it would be great to see him turn on his alliance and put some of them up. So I'd like to see what he would do with it. Unfortunately, I feel like Elena would just put up Jody, and that's just really boring to me. So I would like to see, I think it'd be great to see Mark win.
This is kind of a luck competition, but the house guests have talked, at least on the Paul and friends side, about throwing it to Josh. It seems to be purely luck based, so I don't think that that's going to happen. But I think it could open it up to really anybody winning this HOH.
Well, we shall see. Maybe not tomorrow night, but certainly by the Sunday show, we will see what happens in the chaos after the halting hex. The incantation is officially said on eviction night, and eviction night will die. But this coverage certainly will not. Again, Rob will be live after the eviction, I'll put in quotes, episode with Eric Stein, Johnny Mack, Taryn Armstrong, Alex Kidwell. I'll be in the audience. It's certainly going to be a fun time, so I hope everyone makes it out there who can, and people listen in afterwards. It's going to be a really fun time. I want to thank you both for being on and for, you know, talking through some very not-so-fun things that have been happening on the feed so far. These are really difficult conversations, so I really want to commend you both for not only keeping up on them, but also getting to report on them as well. You can follow these lovely ladies on Twitter. Liana is at Liana Boras, LianaBoraas. Melissa is at Melissa with three A's, just
it's
like the
Melissa.
Three nominees. Oh, it's Melissa. I'm sorry.
That's okay.
It's Melissa with three A's.
Yes.
Like the three nominees we have on the block by the end of tonight and into tomorrow. I am at a Mike Bloom type. If you want to hear me talk some more BB, I do Big Brother exit interviews for Parade. I just released my one with Ramsey a couple days ago. Had some interesting thoughts about the house and how he talked about this with Julie about how even though the us outside might have thought he was not campaigning that much, he actually thought he was, so you could get his side of the story. I won't have an eviction up, obviously, if there is no eviction, but I should be moving forward. If you're a Game of Thrones fan as well, I do recaps there, as well as hopping onto the Dom and Colin podcast to talk Game of Thrones with the great Antonio Mazzaro a couple days ago. So check all of that out. Make sure you're checking out all the other great stuff on Rob Has a Podcast as well, the Daily Live Feed Update, featuring the one and only Liana Boris, assumingly on Saturdays. Liana, right? We'll see you in a couple days.
Well, actually, I'm traveling and then getting my wisdom teeth pulled, so ooh. I will be back, but with 75% less wisdom.
Okay. Well, that's still 50, there's still 100% more wisdom than I have. So you're still, you have the wisdom of a 32-year-old, and I have one of a 26-year-old. So that is definitely saying something.
So much more.
To finish things off, do we have a hashtag for any people who made it to the end of this podcast tonight? I'm trying to think of some off the top of my head. The one I have is America's Favorite Pots, but I don't know if there are any better ones out there.
I had BB Soap Opera. But that
I'd
was
seen
the only
one earlier, but now I forgot it.
Yeah, chat room.
Chat room, help us.
All right, I'll keep talking while the chat room fills in some stuff here. So, yeah, thank you guys so much for tuning in. Let us know your thoughts as well. Reach out to us on Twitter in the comments about your thoughts about everything that went on, what's going on moving forward. I'm seeing a hashtag friendsheep. Bold and Beautiful Jody. That sounds like a Clean and Clear commercial. Bullygate, Friendship Killer. Any of those stick out to you guys?
I guess I like friendsheep. I think that's funny.
Yeah, that's good.
Did we just find a new nickname for Paul's Alliance?
Right. I guess
yes.
So
we went from dogs to sheep.
Oh yeah, Dead Pot Society is what I saw earlier that I liked.
All right, so let's go with hashtag friendsheep. Again, Melissa, Liana, thank you both for coming on. I thought you did a great job. Thank you all for listening. Rob will be back tomorrow night live to talk about the assumingly lack of eviction, but of course all the drama that's going to go on around it as well. Until then, take care. Bye-bye.